Okay, folks, still feeling a bit full? Here's a tune to go with that bloated feeling. This Gustav Mahler sure puts to music the notion of overindulgence, which is where we begin this year's post-Thanksgiving chat with music commentator Miles Hoffman. And Miles, I'm reaching for the Alka-Seltzer.
Well, and in fact, I think what would be fun to talk about today is the reaction to overindulgence, the musical dieting that came after this rich musical feast of enormous works in the late 19th and early 20th century.
Well, before we get to the cure, just tell us a bit more about this music that we're listening to and what it meant in its time.
This is the Symphony No. 8 by Gustav Mahler, also known as the Symphony of 1,000. And in fact, at the original performance in 1912, there were 1,028 performers. A lot of people did say it was overindulgent, and composers reacted. What this all led to, in a sense, was a movement that later was called neoclassicism, a kind of a going back to older forms, smaller forces, just cutting back in general.
Then who was a leader of this cutting back, as you put it?
Igor Stravinsky was undoubtedly the most important composer in this general movement. And let's listen to a little bit of one of Stravinsky's enormous works from before his stylistic change. If we listen to the end of Firebird. And then compare that to a later Stravinsky work. I think you'll hear the contrast. This is from a piece that Stravinsky wrote. It's actually much later, from the 30s, but that's okay. It's called the Dumbarton Oaks Concerto, and it's really like an old concerto grosso, almost, from the Baroque period.
Very delicate, especially by comparison.
Well, that's right. Yeah, I mean, it's not just that these pieces were smaller. There was an entirely different aesthetic. We think of lush versus lean, self-indulgent versus restrained. And one thing I should point out here, Renee, is that what influenced these musical styles was not simply a musical trend or a reaction to what had come before. What we have to remember is that along the way, there was this little thing called World War I. And there's no way, in some ways, to just be as earnest as you were before. So from warm, evocative music, we get this point of view of reserve, of irony, of even bitterness.
Play us a work from another composer that illustrates what basically you've just been saying, but illustrates the reaction to, say, the big Mahler piece that we heard in the beginning of this conversation.
Well, I think the Stravinsky is a nice example, but the Stravinsky is also in a language that's very familiar to us, a musical language that's very familiar. His harmonies in that little excerpt we just heard really wouldn't have surprised Mozart. Arnold Schoenberg, on the other hand, reacted to, in some ways, to his own style, his own earlier big style, and the style of the German Romantics, with an entirely new musical language.
And Miles, what year is this Schoenberg piece from? Because I'm thinking that when it would have been first played, it would have been very hard on the ears of people hearing it.
Well, it was from the early 20s, between 1921 and 1923, and it did not have great success for the most part. And in fact, Renee, really still doesn't. Schoenberg's music, his atonal compositions, have never proved terribly popular or successful with the musical public.
Well, of course, we know, I mean, they're famous now, but how influential were composers like Schoenberg and Stravinsky when they were coming up with this new sort of slimmed-down music?
Very influential. And they were influential all over the world. One of the hotbeds of this new aesthetic was Paris. And there was a group of composers called Les Six, the Six. What they wrote, I suppose you might call it, especially since we're thinking about food after Thanksgiving, Renee, you could call it a nouvelle cuisine compared to the old rich, creamy sauces of earlier music. And if we listen to one of the Six, the music of Francis Poulenc, we can hear this idea taken into wittiness, but wittiness combined with really great charm and beauty.
Feel like a little circusy feeling here. Little wings.
It's funny you should say circus, because these composers wanted specifically to include the influence of circus music, of popular music, of music that's made by machines. So that's a great point.
Miles, how long did this, what you might call the reaction to Bloat, last? I mean, was there then a reaction to that? Did a new generation of composers sort of effectively say, stop with the diet?
Well, I think what's happened is that we're now in an omnivorous period, Renee. You know, these philosophical and aesthetic battles seem terribly important at the time, and in some ways, naturally, they are historically, but from a great distance, we don't really care about them anymore. All we care is that there's a lot of great music that these folks write, and I think now people write simply and have been writing whatever they want. If they want to write big, overheated pieces, they do. If they want to write little minimalist, dry, witty, ironic pieces, they do that. That is where we find ourselves now.
Miles, thank you.
Thank you, Renee.
And since we started this conversation a little bit stuffed, let's stick with something lighter, at least, than the Mahler that we started with.
So not the Symphony of a Thousand, but we'll go back to our Poulenc trio to say goodbye today, Renee.
Miles Hoffman is violist with the American Chamber Players, and he's also dean of the Petrie School of Music at Converse College in Spartanburg, South Carolina. Visit npr.org/music to get the skinny on this piece and all of our classical cuisine. And a happy day after to you. It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Renee Montagne.